Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast, where we'll be hearing from a Cork suckler farmer and be taking a tea break in Carrantoohil with Katie Jane Cronin. But first, you'll probably have heard there are ructions within the DUP in Northern Ireland at the moment. But there are also other ructions going on, as our Northern editor David Wright heard when he spoke to the Ulster Farmers Union Deputy President David Brown, who has significant concerns about a Northern Ireland climate change bill, which is currently making its way through Stormont.
We also are aware that, you know, there's climate change legislation being talked about in Northern Ireland, and a bill currently going before Stormont from a private member's bill. You have concerns about that, David. Maybe would you outline those concerns of where that sits versus a Department of Agriculture bill that is currently with the executive and hasn't yet got to a bill stage, whereas this private member's bill has. What are the main differences between those two bills, and what are your concerns about that?
Well, I suppose it's fair to say we haven't had sight as yet of what that DIRA bill might entail. However, it's clear that the indication is it's been based upon the recommendations of the Climate Change Committee, which ultimately at the end of the day for the whole of the UK is directed towards reaching net zero in terms of emissions by 2050. Their line back in December was that would mean an 82% reduction in emissions based on the 1990 baseline in Northern Ireland. So 82% by 2050, that's what the Climate Change Committee have suggested. As we understand, that is what the DIRA bill would be based on. The private members bill, however, is very clearly going further and going faster, in the sense that it is indicating that they want to be by 2045 100% at net zero. And the major concern is that the Climate Change Committee have said that that will mean 100% by 2050 would mean a 50% reduction in livestock production in Northern Ireland. They have also indicated that 46% of land in Northern Ireland would need to be released for other uses, for forestry, for agroforestry, energy crops, 150,000 hectares of peatland rewet. All of those things are part of what would be necessary to reach the climate change recommendations, and the private members bill wants to go even further than that. So understandably, representing farmers, we are very concerned about that.
And what do you think this will, this would mean? Obviously, if this private members bill went through, what would it actually mean for livestock production? So you're talking more than 50% of livestock being removed by 2045, essentially. So that's major implications, particularly for our red meat and dairy sectors, which is where our big turnover is, David.
Yeah, well, not having a big turnover. I mean, fundamentally, the ruminants or cattle effectively are where a lot of these emissions, those agricultural or natural unavoidable emissions that come from our cattle and production of livestock. But, you know, I think when we look back to, some of what might surround or be part of that discussion, our MLAs are trying to tell us that, you know, this is aspirational, but it's about pointing us in a particular direction and move. And look, farmers are not climate deniers. They are at the forefront of the weather and it affects their daily businesses, their daily workload. But at the end of the day, if you put something into legislation, it's put there for a purpose. That purpose is be that it forces change by putting something into law. And the policies that will derive from that legislation will have a fairly big impact on the agriculture as we know it in Northern Ireland. As an agricultural economy, it will affect not just the farming community, but wider society, because 100,000 jobs are dependent on the agricultural sector and food and processing and so forth. And if we reduce the production, then that will have an impact there. I think perhaps the more significant part, though, is that people still need to be fed. UK is only about 60% self-sufficient. So therefore, if we are not producing that food locally, we will in effect export that food production, and we will be bringing in food from other parts of the world. Northern Ireland has 2.5 times less emissions than the global average for meat, for example. Dairy, you know, has reduced its emissions intensity by 34% from 1990 to 2017. All of those things, our farmers are working towards improving and reducing emissions. And yet this private member's bill will force the importation of food because people still will need to be fed.
David Wright there. Well, there has been a lot of talk about the outdoors theme for the summer months, and Irish Country Living reporter Anna Dunhu spoke to Katie Jane Cronin about her family and their tea rooms in Carrantuohill.
Over your lifetime, would you have seen kind of Cronin's yard grow a lot, I suppose, with the tea rooms and everything else kind of coming on?
Yeah, so Mum and Dad built the tea rooms when I was, well, we opened when I was 11. So it was the October bank holiday 2006. We opened the front door, and it's only been getting busier and busier since, which is great. You know, it's really cool. It's really cool to see it happen like that, because there was nothing there. All that was there where the tea room is now was, we'll say, a shed where that my granddad had, you know, bits and pieces for the farming. That's all that was there. And I can still remember that being at the bottom of the yard, and now to see it a full-on business by them. It's amazing. I'm a proud daughter.
that's good. I'm sure you're proud parents as well. Yeah. And that social element of it that your grandparents would have kind of fostered, did that keep on, that it would have been a place for chatting and, you know, socialising?
Massively, yeah. I would say that's probably where I got my love of talking from. My grandmother would talk for Ireland, literally, and Dad would be the same. So, I don't know. It's just, it's bred into us, like, you know, that when someone is there, you talk to them. Doesn't matter where they've come from or where they're going. You have a chat and you make them sure that they're welcome. And, you know, you wouldn't want them going back saying that they weren't felt welcome, you know?
It's a good way to be, though, to be fair. And I'm sure you were exposed to lots of different people, because obviously people from international people coming to climb the reeks and all over the country.
I've met people from all over the world since I was little, you know. There has been people from Egypt, Israel, all over the world. So, you know, I loved it. I really did. I loved it. And especially I went to a Gael school. So, and Mum and Dad don't speak a word of Irish. And so sometimes people would come and Mum and Dad would be chatting to them, and it'd turn out, oh, they were an Irish teacher, and I'd get to speak Irish to them, you know, this kind of thing. So I'd get to meet loads of people, and I loved it.
And you're quite into the Irish, Katie Jane. You did it in college as well, did you? You studied it.
So I did. I did a course called Cumarsod. It was under the bracket of arts in NUI Galway, but it was actually based out in the deep depths of Connemara, out in Carraroe, on Carraroe, in a place called Achadav na Hullscoileach de Gaeilge. And it was a media and communications course through Irish. I think it's turned into a different course now. I think they've split it up into Irish and media and journalism or whatever. But it was good crack, really good crack.
And that full interview is online. Stay tuned, because we still have a suckler farmer from County Cork and Tom or Arnold on the delivery of the 2030 strategy for agriculture.
Farmers face €300 million hit to farm payments. For more, in your Farmers Journal, is Paul Mooney.
Top cap negotiator warns of payment limits for eco schemes. Further crackdown on supply of wormers and antibiotics. We reveal how beef, dairy and sheep farmers can reap the rewards from new REP scheme. And will tractor drivers be forced to install tachographs in their cabs?
Plus, this week's Focus has your complete guide to buying a new stock bull. Only inside this week's Irish Farmers Journal, on sale now.
Now, last week we covered quite extensively, you might have noticed, in the paper, the draft agri-food strategy. This week, my colleague Phelim O'Neill spoke to chair of that committee, Tom Arnold, who describes how farmers are central to the delivery of the 2030 strategy for agriculture and how it has to be economically viable.
For farmers and for farm household incomes, I think I'd like to say that that whole notion of, I think it is the reality that we're going to have a core group, and it's a shrinking core group of, if you like, fully commercial farmers, and it's around the dairy sector. But for a lot of the rest of it, you know, you're not going to get income possibilities for a lot of farmers, given the scale that they're operating. So yeah. There has to be income, has to come from somewhere else.
I think that's the space maybe that you can see possibilities, particularly in terms of renewables of energy, and you know, don't need to have a wind farm with about 100 turbines in it. Let's see what we could do with one turbine in terms of them generating and feeding into the grid, etc. Same with solar, same with others. I think that's a space that maybe can be I don't know. Perhaps it wasn't the forum to do it in, but I think that's where there's a complementary nature, if you like, between farming and energy production in the rural environment.
Very much so. But there has to be, I think, a sense of ownership at community level. I think that's really important. And so more discussion about different income opportunities from a variety of sources,
yeah,
I think, is part of that future.
And historically, we've tended to farm those out, to use the pun, to the large corporates, I suppose. That's something that we feel maybe is an area for thought. Anyway, I'm conscious of time, Tom. It's now 10:07. Is it okay if I just maybe ask a couple of questions for an audio clip?
Of course, sure.
Right. Okay. We're joined this week in the podcast by Tom Arnold, who has chaired the Agri-Food Strategy Committee that has come up with the draft report that's out now to consultation. Tom, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning. What's your impressions of the initial reaction and response to the report that was published just over a week ago?
Well, I think it's been relatively quiet. I hope it's going to become much more of a public debate. We've tried to facilitate that by sponsoring 4 webinars about different aspects of that, and there's been considerable interest in that. But we're now, it having been published on the 15th of April, it's a 2-month consultation period whereby people will have the chance to submit their views, and we're very much hoping that that will happen. At that point, when the document will have to be finalized, so the committee will go back to have a final look at it. But I do hope that overall the strategy is going to set a direction of policy and ambition indeed for the next decade.
I think it's fair to say that it's very strong on the climate and on the environmental side, with very specific and measurable targets, which of course are necessary given the targets that we have to operate to at a global level, never mind a local level. It's less precise and less clear in terms of economic sustainability at farm level. Would you accept that?
Well, to a point I would, Phelim, but I actually fundamentally I wouldn't. Because I do think that this strategy has put the welfare of the primary producer at the heart of the strategy. And I mean, the second mission too is called the visible and resilient primary producers with enhanced well-being, and 4 big policy measures to support that. And so I do think that the trying to achieve that mission is really at the heart of the strategy. And I do think in a whole range of areas, like diversification of farm household income, new alternative income sources at within rural levels, energy production, the bioeconomy, a whole range of things. We are suggesting in this strategy things that do, you know, directly address the economic sustainability issue.
So do you feel that an economically successful and sustainable farming sector is essential to the delivery of the climate and environmental aspects of the strategy? Do you feel the two are totally intertwined, that you won't have one without the other?
We're very clear about that. We're very clear to say that sustainability has three dimensions: economic, environmental, and social. They're interconnected, and you won't be able to deliver any one without delivering the other two. And there is, you know, we easily talk about economic and environmental sustainability. We don't as much talk about social sustainability, but this strategy makes very clear that this is important. It should be seen as going hand in hand with the rural development strategy recently published. But there's also dimensions there about things like mental health, about farm safety, etc., which are also really important matters which the strategy deals with, and which I think previous strategies have not dealt with sufficiently.
And that's a fair point. And I suppose my final thought to then, Tom, is in the ideal world, the competitive advantage that the strategy talks about for Irish agriculture that it can achieve by this, in the ideal world, the market will deliver that economic sustainability to farmers and the farming business. If it doesn't, do you feel that others, that it will then be the responsibility of the European Union through the Common Agriculture Policy and additional just transition funds and the Irish government funds? Do you feel it's their responsibility to bridge that gap if the market doesn't deliver everything that's needed?
We're very clear that continued strong support from both Europe and the Irish government is a key part of looking to a sustainable future. But we also say that if we can achieve sustainability in the sector, that indeed is the basis for differentiation and competitive advantage for Ireland. And hopefully that should translate into some level of premium price and premium access to the growing international markets.
Tom Arnold, thank you very much for that.
And last but certainly not least, our beef editor Adam Woods talks to Ben Ryle from Watergrass Hill in County Cork about his Felfort pedigree Aberdeen Angus herd of 75 cows and what's happening on his farm at the moment.
Okay, the Irish Farmers Journal visited Ben and Elaine Ryle just outside Watergrass Hill in County Cork this week. Ben, I suppose, tell us a little bit about your farming system here, what you're farming and the system that you run.
We're running a pedigree autumn calving Angus herd, breeding bulls for use predominantly in the dairy herd.
And I suppose you've chosen the breed, it's all Angus. Why Angus?
I suppose I inherited Angus from my father, who was breeding before me, and I could see they were profitable. We were in the middle of a dairy area, so really it was a bit of a no-brainer to stick with them when we had a ready market for our produce, you know, within a very short radius of the farm.
You're concentrating on the dairy market, I suppose, to breed bulls for that dairy market. What at the moment, if a dairy farmer comes into the yard, what are they looking for?
The number one that every dairy farmer will ask is easy calving. That is the highest priority on the dairy farmer's list at the moment. Some of them are becoming more aware that they need to produce more than just a calf, a black calf. They need to have a better quality calf that they know is relatively saleable. Dairy farmers are after realizing that they need to be able to sell these calves. And I can see there's been a shift in their mindset towards that.
I guess it's early days for the Dairy Beef Index, but do you think that that'll maybe catch on in time and maybe dairy farmers will come in here and be asking you for bulls with a high Dairy Beef Index?
Definitely, I would say it will be more of an influence going forward, especially where you'd say if they can correlate the sire to the calf, that you'll give that calf a definite parentage, then your Dairy Beef Index will apply. Any of these things really won't matter until you can positively identify the sire to the calf.
You're 100% autumn calving, so you're in for a pretty handy summer of it. You're going to put your feet up for the next few months. Tell us a little bit about what's happening on the farm at the moment and what the plans are for the next few weeks.
At the moment, we're just after starting our second rotation on the grazing. We have three groups of cows calving and a group of in-calf heifers. The cows with calves, they're split between cows with heifer calves, cows with bull calves, and a group of cows with the later born calves that were born in October of last year. So it's just the daily task at the moment. What we're doing is we're going through the yard at the moment. We're power hosing out all the housing and we're just cleaning everything going ahead. We'll have it all cleaned out. Hopefully in the next fortnight we'll be finished that. Then it'll be just going around general maintenance and stuff like that. We'll be on to cutting silage then hopefully in the middle of May.
In terms of bull sales, is everything complete for spring 2021? I will say, how did that go?
Yeah, 2021 season went very well for us. Everything, the bulls are all gone. Generally speaking, we would sell a few bulls around Christmas to winter milk producers. And after that, people will be coming to the yard, picking their bull that they want for delivery between Patrick's Day and the 1st of April as a rule. So there's more customers then just have standing orders, and it's a case of delivering whatever quantity of bulls those customers want, usually again from Patrick's Day till the 1st of April.
Just finally on weather, it's been a pretty good spring, I take it, down here in the south. You've lots of grass out there. We'll say, how has it been for you in terms of managing grass and managing cattle, getting them out?
Yeah, it's been a superb spring for us in that aspect. We put out our in-calf heifers at the end of February and they have remained out since. We put out our calves, I think, around the 12th of March. They were out for a week and then the weather just turned a little nasty. We brought them back in for 5 days and we put them out then again after that. And they're out since and it's been superb. We're getting them a superb clean out of pastures and stuff like that, which will really stand to the regrowth that's coming on for the rest of the grazing season.
That's Ben Royal speaking to the Irish Farmers Journal just outside Watergrass Hill in County Cork. Thanks very much, Ben.
And that's it for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in. And be sure to pick up the paper or subscribe to the app for our front page and all the farming news tomorrow. I'm Hannah Quinn Mulligan and the sound engineer was Claire Nash.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.